From Politico, this is Women Rule, where we bring you real talk with women bosses. I'm Anna Palmer, senior Washington correspondent and co-author of the Politico Playbook.
She said, I have nothing to wear. And I thought I said the most obvious thing. I said, look, you live a couple blocks away from Fifth Avenue. Let's just go and get you something.
Let's go shopping.
Let's go shopping. And she looked at me like I had two heads. And she said, there's not a single store on Fifth Avenue that I can walk into and buy clothing for myself.
This week, we're bringing you a conversation with two enterprising women, Polina Vexler and Alex Waldman, the founders of the size-inclusive clothing line Universal Standard. Vexler and Waldman knew from firsthand experience that there was a huge gap in the clothing market. There were no high-fashion clothes for plus-sized women. So the two left careers in finance and PR, invested $150,000 each into the business, and launched their first collection out of Waldman's New York City apartment in 2015. The company's not even 4 years old, but they've gotten a lot of buzz. And their funders include people like Gwyneth Paltrow and the founder of Tom's. We taped this as a live interview at The Wing's new Washington, D.C. location, and we talked with Waldman and Vexler about their journey into the fashion world and how they've seen their clothing line impact the lives of women. Stay tuned for our interview with Polina Vexler and Alex Waldman. On the podcast, we'll be bringing you real talk with women bosses, asking how did you make it and what advice would you give a woman looking to lead? If you're a fan of the show, please subscribe to Women Rule on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us and leave a review. And please share our episodes on social media and follow me on Twitter at @apalmerdc. You can also join the Women Rule community by texting WOMEN to 66866. Women Rule is produced by Politico in partnership with our founding partners, Google and the Tory Burch Foundation. And now, our interview with Polina Vexler and Alex Waldman.
I am joined next to me by Polina Vexler and Alex Waldman. They are co-founders of Universal Standard, a size-inclusive clothing line. I want to first thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
I want to ask, you know, for anybody who doesn't know what Universal Standard is, talk to us about what it is, what the mission is, what your goal is.
Primarily, we are sort of a rule breaker. We got into this space in order to provide all women with the type of clothing that we just didn't see, especially for women over a certain size. So we're actually a plus size native brand that intends to create a holistic and a totally inclusive line of apparel for women.
So what does that look like? So kind of explain, we don't have a computer up showing us what this kind of clothing looks like, but you know, it's for the working woman, you know, kind of trying to find something to wear to work, but then also night and kind of
so
walk us through
of
that.
Brands like Theory, Vince, Helmut Lang, Rag & Bone. What we saw was you look at these brands and it's great quality. There are minimalist, style relevant. And unfortunately, all these brands, when we looked at them, tended to stop carrying clothing at a size 10, 12. And we said, that just doesn't make sense. Why can't a woman who wears a size 22, 24, 28 experience the absolute same type of fit, quality, and style? So it's that clothing for the everyday. It's for you to go to the store, buy your bananas, and still look like you care about fashion.
So talk to me, one of the things that you've done beyond just creating this clothing line, and Alex will go to you first, but is kind of this Universal Fit Liberty program. We were talking about it a little bit beforehand, but explain to our listeners and the people in the audience here why you thought there was a need for it and what you're trying to do with it.
Well, as you can see, I'm an end user, an end consumer myself, and you only know your own personal experience. What we saw when we opened our showroom was that it's a shared experience, and a lot of women look at themselves in the mirror and they don't actually see what's looking back at them, or else they see it and they won't accept it. It's like, that's me, but I'm going to be a better me. It's not really how I'm going to stay.
I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to go down. Who's been in the dressing room saying, oh, like, I'm going to get a smaller size because, you know, someday it's going to work.
Exactly. Like, I'm not going to buy this nice thing that costs over $100 because that means I'm committing to this. And I'm not committing to this because I'm going to get rid of this. This is not the me that I want to be. So they either defer purchasing something nice and something that will make them feel wonderful, or they buy something that's the wrong size because, you know, they're going to get into it. And we all have that pair of jeans or that dress that sits in our closet and just taunts us and just says, you never got down here. And, you know, you play this little mental game with yourself where you kind of know it's there and it's got its own voice when you walk into your closet. But we just saw a lot of sort of self-bullying going on. And we thought, what can we do to shut that voice up? And what we thought would be great is to say, look, buy exactly for who you are right now. Feel great. Make sure the clothes fit you as you are. And then in a year, if you go up in size, if you go down in size, just send back the clothes and we will send you your new size for free. Just kill that bully and feel fantastic from the first moment you put the clothes on.
For those of us that are in the audience who aren't familiar with your story, take us back a couple years. You weren't always fashion mavens, you know, doing events at the Wing. You both had previous careers. Where did you start your career and kind of how did that lead to this genesis?
So I was doing something super relevant prior to this. I was investing in agriculture, commodities, and real estate. in Africa. So it really prepared me. And Alex?
I had been a fashion journalist, so I had some experience, obviously. But my experience was relegated to just retelling the story for other people who could use these beautiful things. So I would sit as a journalist, and I would look at all these incredible things being walked past me, and I, you know, bought into it myself, thinking that, you know, every inconvenience that I experience, I deserve because I have a big body. So, you know, if I really wanted fashion, if I really cared, I wouldn't be this size, which is that sort of prevailing message that society is constantly throwing at us. And I bought into it, and so I was a conduit through which other people discovered beautiful things that I was not allowed to participate in. So that went on for some time, and I was the fashion editor for a national newspaper. And then I worked in marketing, and I wanted to do something like this for a very long time. And it wasn't until a tipping point moment, actually, between the two of us as friends that we decided to create Universal Standard.
And then this whole thing came about when one day we were invited to go to an event, and I was excited to go. And
as was I, by the way. So this is like, I wanted to go. That's an important fact.
And then all of a sudden, Alex said, I'm not going. And I said, what do you mean we are not going?
I'm not going.
And I said, what do you mean you're not going? And she said, I have nothing to wear. And I thought I said the most obvious thing. I said, look, you live a couple blocks away from Fifth Avenue. Let's just go and get you something.
Okay. Let's go shopping.
Let's go shopping. And she looked at me like I had two heads. And she said, there's not a single store on Fifth Avenue that I can walk into and buy clothing for myself. And that was the first time I realized that, because this whole world is behind the veil unless you're the one suffering from the lack. So then she took me into her world. We went to a department store and we passed the most beautiful floors of nicely merchandised clothing with the perfume sprayed and the lights and everything. And we went up to the furniture floor and somewhere next to last year's bikinis and some nonstick pot and pans, Alex said, this is where I can shop. And that is the first time I saw the type of lack that exists. I couldn't believe it.
And you have to understand the gravitas of that. It's not just like this. You know, this is where, this is a corner, the northwest corner of the furniture floor of a department store is where I get to choose how to present myself to the world. This tiny, tiny pool is where I get to say, hey, world, this is who I am. That, there is a huge pain point there. There's a huge unfairness in it. I don't know how else to put it. It's really painful.
So how did you go from, I mean, obviously painful experience, you're kind of bringing her into your world, which I'm sure also was, I don't know, I would probably have flop sweat when that happened, you know, kind of going through that experience to, okay, we're going to start this business. I mean, that's, there's a big jump there.
Yep.
So first when Alex said, I've always wanted to do a clothing line, I said, you're crazy. why would anyone want to go into such a saturated market? Why would anyone want to go into such a market which traditionally has had such low margins? But that's before I started doing my research. And then when we started looking into the space, what I realized was what a white space within a white space this was. So we're talking about 67% or more of American women are size 14 and above.
That's 100 million women.
Not a small demographic.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not a niche market. And if Alex, who's my friend, who is suffering from this, there must be so many others. So we said, why don't we give this a shot? Alex said, I have been collecting for a very long time the type of clothing I've always wanted to make. And so she designed our first 8-piece collection. And
how did you do that? Like, just like step back a little bit. I mean, we've all wanted to do create a business, but I mean, you hadn't sewn clothes before.
To give you like a mental image, think Frankenstein. Okay. So it was cutouts of things I printed, some things from magazines, close-ups of collars, very badly drawn things. I would put a piece of paper on the lit screen of my computer and trace. It was ridiculous. But somehow, you know, it was akin to writing like a kidnapping note, you know, when you cut out all the letters. It was like that. I just like slapped things together and I said, but it's going to be this. And then the whole world of fabrics. I mean, that's really hard. I walked into a really famous fabric store in New York City and I just did not know where to begin. It is so overwhelming. Right. It's like you think it's going to be wonderful, but when you feel those clothes that you love, some very experienced person walked in and knew exactly what was needed in order to make that thing beautiful. And I had zero experience. Both of us had zero experience. So every step we took was a step into just pitch darkness. And you know, like you just take a step and then you look back and you, oh, you get it. But the next step is once again into pitch darkness.
What was it like? Because I assume you were telling your friends, your family, you went to, you know, a design school, you were in finance, but I mean, it wasn't like this is, you've been having the building blocks for success here. Was there a lot of skepticism?
I mean, I would say, and maybe this is still true to some extent, our friends and family thought we were doing a little project. Oh, this is cute. Oh, that's so nice. I think you're going to get skepticism the whole time. And if you believe in something, which we really believe that this whole industry is broken and we need to change it, that we just kept powering through. And hindsight's 2020. It's when you look back at it, I think we did the right thing in terms of just looking at brands that we admired, looking at the theories and saying, hey, where are their clothing made? And so you look at the tag inside the care label and it says Peru.
It was that elemental. It was that elemental.
Wow. And so you go to Peru because Theory and Vince and Helmut Lang and Rag & Bone, people who we admired, said Peru. And so that's kind of the way it all started?
Just to give you an idea, so when Paulina started saying this eight-piece design thing, we went ahead, and this is insane in retrospect, and had 3,000 pieces of this eight-piece collection made, all of which were in my one-bedroom apartment, so that was really comfortable. And Refinery 29 found us because they were desperate to write about this space. It was a very popular space. And they wrote one article, and we sold out in 6 days.
Did you fund it yourself? Was it just kind of up by the bootstraps of your own savings accounts? Or how did this you pay for the $3,000?
Yeah. So we were fortunate. We both had well-paying jobs before this. And so we each put in $150,000 into the business to start.
Which is rich. Most people don't start with that. But then most people don't start with 3,000 pieces. It's a little bit cool and a little bit insane because it could have gone, I could still be living amongst those boxes had it not gone well.
In terms of that, talk about what was your biggest learning experience or your failure, looking back now, the insanity of this, that all worked out. But there had to have been some things that maybe didn't work out.
Yeah, I think when we first started, both of us barely knew how to turn on our computers. We are both not social media experts by any means. Both of us did not even have a Facebook account. Or I didn't even know what Instagram was. So a lot of our failures had to do with that. We just didn't have enough people who were experienced around the table. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have someone who was a developer. We didn't have someone who knew about social media marketing. So we had to learn everything ourselves. And so, of course, you stumble. You stumble along the way. And your website does go down in the beginning.
How many people do you guys employ now?
We currently have 25 employees with offices in both New York and in Seattle.
In that first year of kind of bootstrapping it, were you just working 7 days a week, all the time? Was it tense?
We pretty much still do, to be perfectly honest. It was very tense. Pauline would walk over from her apartment to my apartment every single morning. It was a real job, even though neither of us got a salary and knew what we were doing and everything. I'm actually glad that I didn't know what was coming. I don't know if you'd agree with that, because it's a lot.
She's nodding her head for our listeners.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that.
It isn't easy. It's really hard. And, we worked really, really hard. Here's one thing that I will say that might surprise you. It surprised me. Our lack of knowledge about how things work actually served us very, very well. Because no one told us how things should be. So we just kind of improvised and invented our own ways. And we did things that maybe others would have dissuaded us from had we listened. But we didn't know anyone. It was just the two of us.
So you guys are good friends. You embark on this journey, kind of holding hands together as you take the big leap. Were there moments where it was difficult? I've talked to a lot of founders for this podcast of different companies, and sometimes, they say they've had a joint duo and it's worked out really well. Sometimes they've, had a difference of opinion. Did you have a way to deal with those, I think this should be the way, no, I think this should be the way we go?
So the beauty of this relationship right here is very much that we're yin-yang. The only thing that we really, really have in common is our values. So Paulina is absolutely brilliant at business and at strategy and at pulling and pushing things into being. She is an incredible executive, a fantastic CEO, and just a born leader. I am not that person. I am the sort of human equivalent of the Photoshop to her human equivalent of an Excel spreadsheet. I'm very creative. My thinking process is completely different. I have a visual memory, but, when it comes to numbers or anything else, I'm kind of dotty. But when we come together and look at at issues and problems from those two extremely different perspectives, we always kind of come to the right conclusion.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important in our relationship, the fact that we see things from two different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So I view my job as executing Alex's vision. Alex is the creative genius behind the brand. She is what everyone sees, and the creative design, the visual aesthetic is hers. And my job is to make sure others get to see it.
So we're in Washington, obviously. We're Politico. We talk a lot about politics. The country is having its Me Too movement right now in women's issues. There's a lot of talk about equal pay and things in the pay gap. One of the things in doing some research about this for this podcast, some studies have also shown there's a weight and a size pay gap. One study showed that in women, a 4.6-point increase in BMI resulted in 4,200 less in annual income. So basically, the heavier you are, the less you're going to get paid. As a brand that is kind of welcoming and trying to encourage women to feel good about themselves no matter what size they are, how do you see that? Do you have a role in trying to kind of close that gap? Or do you hear about it from your customers?
We absolutely see ourselves as having a role. One of the things that we're doing is actually in May is we're hosting a discussion group with some really prominent women, because there's a size wage gap, there's a color wage gap, there's the women wage gap, is to get conversation around this topic. So we've organized a panel, which we're hosting May 3rd in our showroom, to have exactly these types of discussions to see what we can do as women to come together and bring light to these issues and do our part in helping close that gap.
It's very difficult to walk into an environment where everyone else has an advantage over you when it comes to how you present yourself. And let's face it, you know, you have one chance to make a first impression. You want to present yourself as capable and strong, and a lot of that is the wrapping. You can say what you want about your abilities, but quite often you won't even have the chance to show your abilities because someone will have presumed certain things about you. And the fact is that for every 25 extra pounds that you carry, you make $13,000 a year less. And a lot of that is not just about the weight. It's the way you're perceived. You're perceived as less capable. You're perceived maybe as more slovenly. You're perceived as somebody who doesn't dot, dot, dot. What we do, or what we want to do, is to level the playing field a little bit and take that obstacle out of your way, so that you can walk into any room, be it a meeting room or a boardroom, whatever it is, and feel completely on par with the other people there.
You also recently raised a bunch of money, something that a lot of women entrepreneurs talk about, how tough it is to actually get men, who are usually the people who are cutting those checks from, you know, venture capitalists, to buy into, I assume, plus-size women's clothing. That's not something they use. It's not something they're fluent in. Talk about that experience.
That was fun. No. We were fortunate. I'm not going to lie. We were very, very fortunate. What we did was we did this as kind of a two-step process, and I think that benefited us a lot. So before we were ready to do a big round, we wanted to do a very small seed round. We raised $600,000in about a year ago now, in May of last year. And we wanted to include in those round people that we knew had the experience that we did not. So we wanted to include entrepreneurs.
Because whoever's giving you money, yeah, has some say into the direction of your company.
Exactly. So, and I mean, we took like $10,000, $25,000, very, very small checks from people. And to see how we would work together, to see who would be helpful, to see if people understood the business and were the right partners for us for the long term. So when it came time to raise the bigger round, the Series A, We actually ended up doing mostly an insiders round because most of the people who participated in that first 600K were so helpful, and we had that time to court and to date before we got into this marriage. So that was a huge benefit to us. So we ended up raising, for the most part, probably 90% from those same individuals.
But before that, we did have a bunch of old guys say things like, why are your models smiling? You know, and you're just looking at them and you're going, oh, you have not looked into a magazine possibly ever. You know, you know, this is a guy who is like presuming to understand a business that is so far from his base of knowledge that, you know, and yet you have to kind of, you know, you have to explain it and you can't be defensive. And, you know, there was some of that as well, obviously.
And you have some pretty big names behind you now. I mean, validators, Gwyneth Paltrow, the founder of Tom's, among others. Has that been helpful just in terms of, as you've gone into, you know, you're expanding the business, which I'd want to talk about next, but having those kinds of folks who can, you know, kind of put their stamp of approval beyond, you know, what you've already done?
It's been mostly about network and relationships. No matter who you have behind you, you still have to prove yourself. And being definitely one phone call away instead of 1,000 phone calls away from a partnership or from a collaboration has been everything. So that has been tremendously helpful. But then all they can do is they can make that introduction. And then it's really up to you to take it to the next level. But yeah, our investors are just fantastic.
So we're running out of time here, but I do want to ask, we were talking a little bit before, kind of what's next? You guys are expanding beyond, you know, you started, you know, in this plus size market, but now you're going to smaller sizes and some larger sizes and also petites. Tell us what should, you know, our viewers and our listeners be on the lookout for, Universal Standard?
Well, we're huge believers in like evening that space and not being the other. So what a lot of people don't realize that it's not just a difference in size, it's a difference in style. And we always say, if you're not going to design that, if you wouldn't design that for a size 6, don't design it for a size 16. People have the same influences. We watch the same shows. We look at the same magazines. We walk past the same windows. My taste is no worse than your taste. You know, give me access to the same stuff. So we really believe that it's time to stop othering women by size. And to sort of, we wanted to, I think we're going to be the first plus size native brand that is going to go into straight sizes and allow women to shop together. Because for us, the big litmus test was whether straight size women who have all the options in the world would look at our clothes and say, oh, I want to buy that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to just break that wall and say clothing, great clothing, affordable clothing, beautiful things are for everyone.
Yeah, our goal is for a size 2 or a size 32 or a 5'1 woman or a size or a 5'9 woman to be able to walk into the same store, go up to the same rack and buy clothing for herself and be able to choose that clothing solely based on her taste and not even have to consider her size in making that purchasing decision.
Well, thank you. Thank you guys so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And thanks so much for coming out today, guys.
Women Rule is produced by Rena Flores. Dave Shaw is our executive producer and our booker is Jessica Andrews. If you're a fan of the show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor and leave a review. It helps new listeners find the show. We've got a lot of great guests coming up. In coming weeks, we'll bring you conversations with Christina Tosi, the CEO and founder of Milk Bar, and the Black Women's Congressional Alliance on Capitol Hill. You don't want to miss any of those episodes, so hit that subscribe button, and thanks for listening.